Okay, great. Okay, so I'm going to do an introduction and then turn things over to my co-conspirator, Von Edelson. So I'm going to try and be more concise than my usual self. As Kim said, we're from Genetic Alliance, which is an organization whose mission is to transform health through genetics by creating an environment of openness focused on the health of individuals, families, and communities. We have kind of three goals within that, really creating novel partnerships and advocacy. We have a long history of engaging disease-specific organization and community-based organization advocates, but really expanding that to all fields. Integrating individual, family, and community partnerships, and revolutionizing access to information, both in terms of informed decision-making, as well as translation of research into services. And we're a 23-year-old nonprofit organization, originally Alliance of Genetic Support Groups, but as genetics has expanded, so have we as an organization. But what I'm really going to talk about today is a project that we have called Community-Centered Family Health History. This project was funded by the Health Resources Services Administration, specifically Maternal Child Health Bureau, Genetic Services Branch. It was a three-year project that came kind of as a follow-up to a specific community project in Harrisburg that kind of was under the same name. And what we really did as the focus of the project was to expand the goals and objectives to promote conversations about health within the family. So genetics is very important, but there are some really important precursors to that, really getting people to talk about health within their family first, understand the relationship between lifestyle, environment, and genetics, and really understand that their family is a great place to talk and understand and learn about that. Also, the issues of translating that information to healthy choices, both through bringing that information to the provider, but also alternative methods, better lifestyle choices within the family, better eating, et cetera. And also increasing community involvement in health education, and that's a broad definition of community that I'll talk about in a second. It's also a multi-part project. So we actually did a lot with this project, and we're only going to talk about a small portion. But I do encourage you to visit our website, visit our booth, as well as we're going to be going through some of our tools at an exhibit theater at 1 p.m. in the exhibit hall today. Really educational materials development. We did an evaluation, which Vaughn will go through our data from. Production of a customizable online version of those educational materials so that people can choose family health stories, choose information on local resources, change illustrations, photos, put their own logos in, et cetera. The idea of not producing a one-size-fits-all tool, but producing something that's a framework that communities can use to produce something more accessible to the people that they work with. And why family health history? As I said, family health history touches on all different types of health. In addition, it kind of is a known entity in the healthcare provider office, though there could always be more education in that realm. But it's something frequently collected on an intake form, and really our focus was to help individuals collect it and then to produce some subsequent materials to help providers know how to use it effectively for both diagnosis and risk prediction. Also, there's a strong need. This is probably the most famous survey, but there's a lot like this. This survey done by CDC, 97% of people said that they thought that family health history is important, and only 30% had ever actually collected that information. So there's a desire and a need, and we kind of wanted to step in to fill the gap on the specific collection side. There are also a lot of online tools. And also, family health history offers multiple access points to information, both in terms of type of information, but also how it can be integrated into community programs, into wellness programs, really medical education, you know, any type of access point. It's very broad. It touches on culture as well as health. And so it's a great kind of entry point for individuals. And as I said, we were using a broad definition of community, really any shared access point, whether it be disease, culture, geography, job, interest, et cetera. And as you can see from this slide, we had many, many partners over this project, really over 20 partners directly using the tool, and then many other partners in the development, as well as kind of side projects and programs, online tools, et cetera. And really, one of the major focus that we, one of the major focuses that we tried to keep at the center of our minds in both the development of the grant and the subsequent materials was that this was really a community research partnership and leading to community, really grassroots dissemination plan. So how to get this information out there. This came down to transparency of goals, really writing the grant proposal together with over 9 different communities, really focusing on data ownership and privacy and recruitment methods, really looking at literacy level as well as language, how language are used, what type of language. The booklets are in English and Spanish. Looking at cultural competency and how to partner with communities to engage their communities, and then understanding conditions, not just family health history, but the conditions that people might have questions about. And at this point, I'm going to turn things over to Vaughn Edelson.
Thank you. So now I'll get down to the data, what we found. Quickly, the project flowchart, we worked with 8 communities specifically for this portion of the project, out of those more than 20 that James mentioned. Each community partner recruited at least 25 families, which had to be 2 or more blood relatives. After consent, they were given a survey, given the booklets. We hope they worked with them for 3 months, and then a follow-up survey afterwards. So here's our demographics that we were working with. Obviously, more females. We tried to have at least 25 males, and we got just that, 25% males, mostly first-degree relatives. Majority had health insurance, good health. I guess along the lines of that CDC survey that James mentioned, we were pretty consistent with that. About 35% of our sample had already collected family health history in the past. So the booklets themselves, heartened to see that people liked them. They thought they were useful, thought their family liked them. Some focus groups that actually some other groups have done, you know, they're very colorful. If you saw the green and red, people like the colors and the personal health stories. They've been able to really resonate with that, and they found them useful. And, you know, people worked with them a few times, read some or most of the booklets. And I think that's pretty much what you would expect. This one is really important to us. How much will you use the booklets in the future? The vast majority of people said at least a little, if not very much, or all of the time, that they wanted to continue to use these booklets with their family and, very importantly, with a provider. If you were in the family health history session this morning, some data was presented on an observational study that showed only 30% of the family history discussions with providers were patient-initiated. So this is really important to us to kind of use family health history to empower individuals and families to really be stewards of their own health, to become partners in their healthcare. And so we hope that they will do as they say and use the booklets in the future with providers. Now to go from that side to this, kind of tricky in the way the question was worded. So it was, I have never or not at all heard anyone talk about family health history, talk to family members. So that went down from baseline to follow-up. So the number of people who were saying they never do these things was statistically significant, saying that less people never do these things. Kind of tricky wording, but basically saying the booklets did increase conversations in the family about health, and that people were sharing the information, talking about it, hearing about it more. The only one that wasn't significant was talking to provider about family health history, and we asked some questions about provider trust. That could have been a part of it. But they were only, the survey was only in a 3-month period. And really, if you're a healthy individual, and most of our sample indicated that they were in good health, you're really probably not going to see a provider in a 3-month window. So that's maybe something, an area for future research. There's also a forthcoming paper from Intermountain Healthcare addressing provider interactions. They were one of our partners, and instead of working with communities and families, they were looking at their provider population, how the providers use family health history and how the patients come to the providers with that information. We did some exploratory secondary analyses, examining each of these main outcomes by secondary outcomes. So for people who knew a lot about family health history going in versus people who didn't know a lot about family health history going in, were there differences in how much they read about family health history and how much they saw materials? Really, we found no major differences. And so, we don't really know what to think about that. Perhaps it was our sample size. Right now we had 6 of the 7 communities' data, so perhaps we just need more families. That leads kind of to what we would do differently. As I just said, perhaps fewer communities, more families in each community would help us see some more of these differences. More questions on family health history beliefs, and then really kind of a longer study period. You know, at least that could help us get to perhaps the provider, use of the information with the provider, and whether people actually continue to use this information in families. Future research questions, you know, in the session this morning, we talked about this, and obviously the NIH State of the Science meeting on family health history just recently happened a couple months ago, and you know, there's not a lot of evidence of family health history in primary care, and hopefully outcomes from that meeting will generate more data. But we really believe that, you know, family health history is used and should be used outside the primary care setting. Kind of your family, your community are the most basic care providers. There are many other people who provide care and support other than the physician. So really, you know, we want to look at things like individual uptake of tools, you know, community-led family health history projects. The other part of this community-centered family health history initiative was we gave out 10 program awards, $10,000 grants for people to integrate family health history into what they were already doing, into ongoing programs and initiatives to show that family health history is really relevant and accessible in a way that maybe genetics, genomics as a word and a concept isn't. I think more research around use of family health history in the community setting is really important. Also, this is a screenshot of the Genetic Alliance YouTube page, but we did a family health history public service announcement last year in the DC, Maryland, Virginia area over the holidays, December, January. And because of the accessibility of family health history, I think it really can be a unifying theme in public health messaging. So how to use it to introduce the public to concepts of genetics, introduce them to conditions that perhaps, you know, they're not as familiar with. Other, you know, we started with heart disease, diabetes, and cancer. People know that it's pretty much everyone has one of those in their family. But how do we use this family health history messaging to educate more about genetics? And I'll just throw up another one here about online tools versus paper-based tools. In the last session, that was mentioned a little bit. With age differences, the older people felt much more comfortable with paper tools, but recognized the value of the online tools, whereas the younger groups were much more willing to use the online tools. And you know, especially, you know, in this age, people are increasingly becoming more comfortable with the internet. People really vote with their feet, and yet, you know, these days with kind of a click of the mouse. So if we can measure those types of things, what they're using online tools, how they're using online tools, and what kinds of tools, then, you know, just can really inform all of this work. That's pretty much all we have. I think we stayed pretty close to right on time, so. James wants to add anything to that, but as he said, we have booklets that you can check out at our booth, and an online version of those booklets where an individual can go and customize them with personal health stories, photos, or health condition information for a family, or you can customize them for an organization or a community.
And the link for that is familyhealthhistory.org.
No? Early?
So how does some of the satisfaction and utilization data compare to other families' health history approaches?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, at least in terms of, you know, Catherine Wang's presentation was earlier today, people seem to be pretty happy with ours. It's pretty wordy, which was one thing. It wasn't reflected here, but I think it's pretty similar, at least in terms of what I've seen from her research. People like this, ours is actually one of the lower literacy ones, lower reading level, and which is good because most of these tools come out at like a 12th grade or above reading level, and we really tried to keep ours at 8th grade.
And I think one of the really important things with this tool actually is it's meant to be used in conjunction with other tools. So the focus is on talking to your family. Which we thought was a really important piece. There are a lot of online tools. In fact, we referenced them in our booklets to collect information. That's, you know, in an online form and print out a family health tree or pedigree to bring to the provider. That was not the focus of this tool. This tool is focused on the conversation itself.
I think you had a question. I wondered if you had any data on self-discovery of the webpage.
So for the customizable online tool, how many users do we have right now?
We have about 250 or 300 users of the online tool, and we, in our initial testing, we did some of that, and people have been finding it pretty easy to navigate, pretty straightforward. We have a survey up there attached to it that say, you know, when you download a book, saying, please take our survey, let us know how we can improve the tool, and the uptake on that survey hasn't been so high, but people, at least in general, with we tested it with all of our partners and kind of had them send it to some other people to do some of the pre-testing of the tool, and they all were pretty satisfied with at least its usability and user-friendliness.
Yeah, actually it came out very high, and one of the things that we did do is then take that feedback along with the feedback from the formal evaluation and go back and make changes to the tool itself. I think you're next over there. Okay, go ahead.
When you talk about sharing, say, the family members with providers, it occurs to me that the tool could be in various states. It could be raw, it's not filled out yet, and then so they brought it and they shared it, at least in an initial sense. And then they could bother to talk with the family and collect information from two or three generations and then bring that to the provider. So I'm asking, do you have any sense of what state they were at as they shared the tool with family and provider?
So as James said, our tool doesn't actually collect the information. It's more about, you know, how do you go about collecting it? Why is this important? So I guess in terms of any information they would be sharing, at least from our tool, is just, you know, let's talk about this, let's have this conversation. And, you know, we hope and we mention how to draw a family health portrait linked to the Surgeon General site. So we don't
sort of,
know.
It's sort of like a sort of dangling the fishing hook, and then you've got a follow-up study you can do.
Well, well, yes. And in fact, we have a study that's finishing up right now with Intermountain Healthcare where the booklets themselves are in their patient portal. So you can actually download the booklets from the patient portal, and they've built a pretty amazing interface to incorporate family health history information. And we're kind of doing a long-term follow-up with providers' offices to see if people brought that information in and how it was taken.
How many years will that go?
That's, how long was the time period
for
that?
Intermountain?
Yeah.
I think up to a year. They were doing it 3 months, 6 months.
Yeah. Do we have time for one more?
Right now, English and Spanish. We have hard copies of English and Spanish. The online tool is in English only at the moment, and we're just starting on the Spanish development. We have had requests from lots of people to do lots of different languages, Russian, French, Portuguese, Italian. Hopefully we'll get there.
And we've tried to build the online tool so that it has that framework and capability to do multiple languages. Because the tool is customizable online, not every section, but large sections, in addition to photos, illustrations, and stories, there are also sections that our communities, our 10 program awardees, identified as things that might be different in different communities. For instance, the Hmong community had said, you know, we have a very different definition of family. And so the sections on kind of family structure, we allowed a little bit more flexibility on, and we'll try and tailor that culturally along with translation to make sure that people can edit those sections of the booklets to be culturally.